An ancient text and a less ancient American author spend some time together in a new book by a North Coast author. The ancient text is the Tao Te Ching, yes, spelled Tao, but pronounced with D sounds. The American author is Ralph Waldo Emerson, who took a similar approach to the world around him. They are brought together in the book Lao Tse, Waldo, and Me, a conversation with the author of the Tao Te Ching and the American Taoist, Ralph Waldo Emerson. That's by Margaret Emerson, who lives in Humboldt County, where she writes, paints, and teaches Tai Chi. Her own practices of Tai Chi, Qigong, and meditation go back 40 years now. Margaret is the author of three previous books. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
And to answer the most obvious question based on your name, you are related sort of distantly to Waldo?
Yes, I am. In 1665, Joseph Emerson married in Concord, Massachusetts. He had five sons, and I'm descended from Peter, and Ralph Waldo is descended from Edward.
Oh, wow. So you're able to draw it that closely, then, to know exactly where on the family tree you fall.
Yes. Well, as you might expect, Ralph Waldo Emerson's family tree is pretty well documented.
Yes, yeah, that's true. I can imagine that. So your bio, though, Margaret, makes it sound like you started all your Eastern practices at once. Was it like that?
Well, yes. I started them back in 1979, and it was part of a healing program for a precancerous condition. Tai Chi was just a way of meditating for me. I didn't think that I would take to sitting meditation because I was so physically active. So I tried Tai Chi and got deeply involved in that right away. And it turned out I also liked to do sitting meditation as well. So that's part of my practice.
The Tao Te Ching is mighty powerful for just, as you point out, just 5,000 words. Why still so revered, do you suppose?
Because there's just so much wisdom in it, and it's human wisdom, so it applies to humans at any period of time. And in some ways, it was quite prescient, really. There's one, I think it's chapter 39 in the Tao Te Ching, where basically Lao Tzu predicts that, you know, if we have an out-of-balance human society, the entire world will be out of balance, and it will affect all the inhabitants of the planet.
Sure seems like he was onto something there.
Yes.
So from the story, it sounds like the book itself was not really Lao Tzu's idea.
Which book?
the Tao Te Ching.
Not his idea.
In the sense that he wasn't the one who said, you know, you should. I'm going to write this down. Somebody else suggested it to him, didn't they?
Oh, well, that's the legend, mm-hmm. Yes, that he was, as an older man, he was leaving civilization or his village, his town, in disgust because there was just constant chaos and war. And when he reached the gates of the city, the person who was manning that gate asked him before, he recognized him and said, before you leave, please write down what you know. And so the legend is that that's what he did. He wrote 81 chapters of the Tao Te Ching.
So now what about Ralph Waldo Emerson makes him a candidate for a pairing with Lao Tzu or Lao Tzu or Lao Tzu or any of the different variations on him?
Lots of different ways. Ralph Waldo Emerson was known as the American Taoist, and some of his mature essays, like Circles and the Oversoul, are really basically Taoist essays. And a lot of it has to do with the connection with nature. To me, Taoism is about harmonizing oneself with nature, and that starts with harmonizing oneself with one's own nature. And so that's the Tao Te Ching is about both those things, too. And Ralph Waldo Emerson, of course, his first published essay was Nature. It was called Nature. So he was deeply connected to nature throughout his life. He believed in intuition. He believed that knowledge was not nearly as important as intuition and life experience as a way of learning things and becoming mature and becoming wiser.
You pick up a really interesting point here, that is, the Tao was not translated into English in Waldo's lifetime. Is that right?
That's right. He was interested in Eastern writers, especially Persian writers like Hafiz, but he had not read the Tao Te Ching.
All right, but you had it available, obviously, and more. I mean, is there a bit of a paradox here of you doing all the reading for your work?
Yes. Well, that's one of the things I talk about, is that both Lao Tzu and and Waldo, that was his preferred name, by the way, Waldo, talked about the importance of unlearning. And however, you have to learn first before you can unlearn. And both those people were very bookish men. Lao Tzu was an archivist, a librarian for an important ruler in China. And, of course, Ralph Waldo Emerson was incredibly well-read. His reading was vast. But it is important eventually to kind of throw away the books and, distill. I guess distill what you've learned and see what fits into actual life experience.
Huh. So to get away from the actual study and turn it into some kind of synthesis or something.
Yes, a synthesis and synthesizing with intuition.
So then how did you organize the book? I mean, you have these two great bodies of work that you were trying to get into one thing. How did you put it together?
Well, that was a challenge for me. Sometimes I felt that I wasn't really up to it, but what happened was I decided that I would read all 8 translations of the Tao Te Ching that I had acquired over about 25 years or more, and I wanted to read them all at once, chapter 1 in all 8 and chapter 2 in all 8, and that's how it started. And then I was seeing certain themes that I was particularly interested in, and I'd been reading Emerson all my life, and so I was seeing a lot of parallels between the two. So I just picked out the topics that I was personally most interested in the Tao Te Ching, and then started rereading Emerson and picking out what of Waldo, applied to those topics.
All right, it all seems to work. The book is called Lao Tzu, Waldo, and Me. Margaret Emerson from the North Coast is our guest on The Exchange and the author of the book. Back in a minute 10. So you talked about how you organized the book and the things that they have in common, the two writers and creators of thought here. But the parallels pop out as you start to walk us into the material. Both of the authors have sort of a view that nature is neutral, which is interesting. It's not like nature is evil or good or anything. It's just there.
Yes. Actually, the Tao itself is neutral. And the definition of the Tao, I mean, who knows what that is, but it's, in Lao Tzu, the closest he comes to defining it is it's both the immaterial world and the material world. The immaterial world contains the material world, but it's not material. So it's very difficult to get your head around it, but it's basically all of existence, and so it's a... I'm sorry, I just lost my train of thought there.
All right, but the idea being that nature is not evil. I mean, it's not, nature's
yes.
not bad to you. Just
yes, it's neutral, and that's a really interesting concept for me, for anybody. I think we all would like to think that the Tao or somehow the powers that be are beneficent and care about us and care about what happens to us and that sort of thing. But both Ralph Waldo Emerson and Lao Tzu tell us that this is neutral energy. It's simply energy that's available to gather and use and apply to our lives. Now, I will say that both people hedge a bit on this. Lao Tzu does say at one point that the Tao stays with the good person, which was a little confusing to me, but I think what he's saying is the Tao stays with people who harmonize themselves with nature and with the good person, and therefore your life is moving in the flow, and therefore it's assisted, by that current, by that flow. And Ralph Waldo Emerson seemed to think the same thing, that at times, whatever these unseen powers are, seem to be helping him out, seem to be there for him when he needed them.
From the way you pose it, though, it seems to put a bit more burden, and you're not just the only one, obviously, but a bit more burden upon the person practicing than in typical Western spiritual traditions. I mean, it's not benevolent per se, but in essence, to borrow from the 12-step programs, it works if you work it.
Exactly. As a matter of fact, Arthur Whaley, I think, translates the Tao. He actually says, work it and more comes out.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a bellows, so there's energy there, and you can simply find ways to gather it and funnel it in the directions that you want to.
So, Margaret, when Emerson calls the Tao, and I mean the other Emerson, Waldo, calls the Tao the oversoul, which you mentioned earlier, what does he mean?
Well, what he's saying is that each one of us has an individual soul, if you can look at it that way. But this individual soul is part of a much bigger soul, which is essentially the Tao. So maybe a Christian would say, or not just Christians, but a lot of people would say, God is within us, as well as, you know, we're sort of swimming in an ocean of God at the same time. So that's, you know, the oversoul, it's a little bit like Jung's collective unconscious.
I was thinking superego myself.
Okay, yeah.
So it has that sort of parallel where it's this sort of like larger view of things than what you bring just yourself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Our guest is Margaret Emerson from the North Coast. Her book is Lao Tzu, Waldo, and Me, a conversation with the author of the Tao Te Ching and the American Taoist, Ralph Waldo Emerson. You point out in chapter two that you read philosophy to apply it, but is application a little tricky with these guys because they're somewhat vague?
I don't know. I mean, I don't find in my own life, I find lots of ways of applying what they have to say in my own everyday personal life and encounters with people and in my connections with nature and that sort of thing. I find that there's, a lot of direct connection there, mundane connection, really, mm-hmm. every day.
Just sort of a few steps beyond breathing. I mean, we're not talking about like real specific sorts of things to do in your life, but just ways to look at the world and respond to it?
No, but it comes down to the way you behave mm-hmm. in the world, too. It comes down to how you treat other people, how you manifest as a person, how you work to mature yourself, you know, to become more authentic throughout your life, to be truly authentic, to look for honesty and truth and tenderness as well in friendship, to show kindness and compassion toward other people. I mean, these things come up every day, you know.
So there's certainly humility in here and yielding, but as you point out, there is a time to not yield, even to use force. Explain what the circumstances might be there.
Yes. In general, you want to lead with the feminine principle. You want to lead with compassion and cooperation and community building and that sort of thing. Now, there are times when, and this is a judgment call, and I think this has a lot to do with growing and becoming more mature as we age and being able to make a judgment call like this, where there are times when you have to stand up and say, no, you know, this is not okay. I'm not bending here. I'm not yielding. There are just certain principles and values that I'm going to stand for no matter what. And so it's, everything isn't just sort of wishy-washy relative, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I can really say that I can make some judgment calls about what's the right way to act here or what's the right policy and that sort of thing. So, and I think that's one of the hard jobs of life, you know, really, is to be able to, first of all, be able to play both roles, you know, to have the ability to be both yielding and strong, and then to know the difference, to be able to discern when it's important to yield and when is it important to, you know, be really forceful and strong.
And by way of example, you blew my mind in your book with the story of Paul Ekman. I assume this is the facial action coding system scientist who interviewed the Dalai Lama about the use of force.
Yes. Yes, he tells, presents a situation for the Dalai Lama. He's talking about how a young teenager was in prison in China, and he was beaten to death by the guards. And the reason that the teenager was in prison was because his father was a political dissident. And Ekman asks the Dalai Lama, you know, what would you do in a situation like that? You know, is how much of a pacifist are you? And the Dalai Lama tells him, if I had a gun, I would shoot that guard. I would stop that from happening. So, you know, that's not the kind of thing that we generally expect to hear from the Dalai Lama. But it shows that, you know, circumstances require judgment and a decision about what's the best way to act here.
Truly, it is far from what we'd expect from the Dalai Lama. Margaret Emerson is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a Humboldt County author. She's written a book about Lao Tzu, Waldo, and me, subtitled A Conversation with the Author of the Tao Te Ching and the American Taoist, Ralph Waldo Emerson. Your thoughts are welcome on the Jefferson Exchange. Anything you're picking up from the conversation you'd like to explore further, join us by phone at 800-838-3760, by email jx@jeffnet.org. We're talking about when not to yield, and obviously, since you took up the Tao 40 years ago or so, our culture has removed a lot of subtlety, polarized in many ways. And I just, you know, I wonder what you find in these texts, both from Lao Tzu and from Waldo, that indicate how you flex to reflect the changes around you.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you react in horror to a lot of the changes that have happened. And then you do what you can to bring about balance, whether that's working on, you know, balance in the environment, balance among people. The polarization is a very, very hard thing to work with, because once you become that polarized, there's just so much emotion involved. But I find that, again, on the mundane level, I can... I have, for instance, a cousin who's an evangelical or fundamentalist Christian. I disagree with her on many, many basic things, and I'm sure she voted for Trump, that sort of thing, but I love her very much, and the reason I love her is because basically I know her. I know her history, and I know that she is essentially a constructive person within her life and among the people that she lives, and she has a great sense of humor too. So, you know, there are ways in which we can relate and connect with people, regardless of this polarization. And it's important, I think, to go to those ways that we do connect, and at the same time, we can't pretend that somehow by connecting emotionally, we're going to start agreeing socially or politically, you know, or that our values are going to be the same. They're not. And I do think that there is going on right now a struggle for really the human soul. I think that humans right now are looking at their mortality, obviously, with climate change. And so it's going to be touch and go, I think, as to whether humans can be resourceful enough, resilient enough, loving enough to be able to flip this situation. And I do think that some of these things like the women's marches, the Me Too movement, they show that people are getting very tired of this sort of bully culture, you know, this culture built around greed and domination. And they're looking for... just out of an instinct for self-preservation, they're looking for another way to do things. And emphasizing the feminine, which is, you know, caring, compassion, cooperation, humility, those things, that's how we're going to be able to change it if we have time, you know, if we can do that.
So, Margaret, did the state of the world today, both philosophically and physically, in part motivate you to write this book?
No. I didn't know where I was going with this book. I ended up there. But I started out, like I said, just thinking it would be fun to read all 8 translations at once of the Tao Te Ching. And then I saw the parallels between Waldo and Lao Tzu. And then I started writing. And so the final chapter on balance, which is really balance between masculine and feminine, yin and yang, that evolved out of the writing. So I guess that's one of the great things about writing, is that not only shows you what you're thinking, but it leads your thinking and evolves your thinking, develops your thinking.
The contemplative practices, the striving for silence, how opposite is that to the traits of our culture now?
Well, in general, of course, it's very opposite. Obviously, and there are lots of people out there who are practicing things like Tai Chi, yoga, Qigong, meditation, and they're benefiting from it. And I think that people are starting to understand that these kinds of practices belong in the schools, you know, belong as a way of helping children deal with their lives, with their own little cultures, their own subcultures, and that sort of thing. And it's really any real change, and we need real change, has to start with a shift in individual consciousness. And these practices, as they spread, and I they are spreading, will help that to happen.
Margaret Emerson is our guest on The Exchange, writing from the North Coast. Her book is called Lao Tzu, Waldo, and Me. There's a great image that you provide in the book of Thoreau, observed by Emerson, by Waldo, sitting on a rock, letting nature just be in the vicinity, and then a parallel story of you doing Tai Chi outdoors in the morning.
Oh, yes. Well, I always practice outside in the mornings, and I've had all sorts of animals very interested in what I'm doing. I think that they don't know what I am because they're not used to seeing humans move that slowly, so they're curious. So I've had deer stand and watch me, dogs, you know, stand still and watch me until I'm finished, and a bobcat one time, too. So it's very interesting because, and actually sitting still outside is one of the best ways to really see nature, you know. Just let it come past you, come by you.
But that's what impressed me was that the whole idea of, like, you know, being somewhat unlike ourselves, you know, not just tromping all over the landscape, but hanging in there for a minute and just sort of letting nature come back to what it would be without us when we're there.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And also letting nature work on us. I remember going for a walk with a friend one time out at the Arcata Marsh, and we sat on a bench. And she was saying to me, she had just read a book by Terry Tempest Williams, and she said that Williams was saying that it's really important when you get into nature to just give it some time, you know, sit still, give it some time to work on you. And I just really got that message as my friend Jennifer and I were sitting there. It really did fill me, I think, fill both of us. There was this circuit from me to nature, to Jennifer, back to me. It was a current running. So it does take time, and I think some stillness in nature, you know, not always hiking or marching through.
Well, speaking of which, Crater Lake is clearly one of your favorite places on the planet Earth, if not your favorite place. You talk about some soul thunderbolts you got there, but you also write about your concern for the environment, the potential clouding of Crater Lake and other evidence of humans messing up the planet. You write that you used to think of us as a failed species. Has it evolved a bit?
Well, I think that it's... Yes. I mean, I used to think of us as a failed species. There are two ways to look at the way I look at it now, which is one is that all species have a cycle. You know, they have birth, growth, decay, death. You know, that's the cycle. And regeneration, you know, in one form or another.
So, Abby, you have some hope for the human species, you're saying. Just it might not be exactly the way it is now.
Yes, it might not be. But like I said, I think that we're up against time right now. And a friend of mine who lived to be about 100, who was a history professor, said that humans are surprisingly resilient. And he thought that there would be a lot of unnecessary suffering because of the effect that we're having on the planet, but that we might just pull it off. So he was optimistic.
All right. It's a great chance to sort of take a calm look at ourselves and the world today. In the book called Lao Tzu, Waldo and Me, a conversation with the author of the Tao Te Ching and the American Taoist Ralph Waldo Emerson. It is the work of Margaret Emerson, our guest from the North Coast. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me, and thank you for performing the service of helping to take the place of our lost community radio here in Humboldt County,
KHSU. Okay, yeah. We hope they work their stuff out. Thanks again, and we'll take a short break here in The Exchange.